AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith, we're going to be talking about African-American spirituals, that wonderful musical form. Our guests talking about that are Dennis Helmrich, who's a professor of music at the University of Illinois. He's chair of the Department of Accompanying. He's a pianist, internationally known for his accompanying many interesting groups. His specialty is really chamber music, but he has a deep love of spirituals, and we're delighted to have him in the studio with us. Welcome, Dennis.
Nice to be here.
Good to have you here. We also have Willie T. Somerville, who is a choir director in two different churches. What two churches, Willie?
Canaan Missionary Baptist, Urbana, and St. Luke Christian Methodist Episcopal of Champaign.
And how you do both of those every Sunday is a miracle.
It's easy.
Willie is also on the faculty staff at the University of Illinois Department of Music, and he's a former choir director of choirs at the Urbana High School here in Illinois. Our third guest is Julie Beiler. Welcome, Julie.
Thanks, Steve.
Good to have you here again. Julie is the founding conductor of the Chorale, which is going to be performing very soon, November 5th. Which is what day of the week is that, Julie?
Soon and very soon.
That's like
Saturday.
Saturday.
Yes.
This coming Saturday,
exactly.
November 5th, a concert at 7 o'clock featuring spirituals. In fact, it's called Our Spiritual Connection. It'll be at the Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. That's on South Prospect Avenue, 1700 block. It's a free concert, and it will feature the music of John Rutter, English composer. He's put together a bunch of spirituals in a group called Feel the Spirit. It will have the guest soloist for that work will be Elizabeth Buckley, a mezzo-soprano. And speaking of mezzo-sopranos, I'd like to start off this time talking about spirituals, but actually hearing one. But before we get to that, I'd like to do one little sort of tribute to this time of year. This is such a beautiful time of year in the Midwest. And there's a poem by Thomas Bailey Aldrich I'd like to read. October turned my maple's leaves to gold. The most are gone now. Here and there one lingers. Soon these will slip from out the twig's weak hold, like coins between a dying miser's fingers. That lovely little gem of a poem has been set to music by Charles Ives, one of America's greatest composers. And I'd like to play a cut of it, a setting by Charles Ives, sung by Mary Ann Hart, the mezzo-soprano Mary Ann Hart, who, as Dennis was telling me, is a graduate of the University of Illinois. And this is accompanied by Dennis Helmrich. This comes from the CD, The Complete Songs of Charles Ives, Volume 4. Short poem, a short art song. The poem by Thomas Bailey Aldrich, A-L-D-R-I-C-H, sung by mezzo-soprano Mary Ann Hart, accompanied on the piano by Dennis Helmrich, Professor Helmrich from here at the University of Illinois. This art song that's part of the CD, The Complete Songs of Charles Ives. Dennis, when did you record that?
You know, I don't really remember.
You've done so many.
Yeah, it was, I think, about 15 years ago.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely CD. There's a spiritual on this very same CD called In the Morning. The Maple Leaves Art Song was written by Ives in 1920. That's setting. In the Morning was 1929. And the words for this are pretty easily understood and probably well known, but it's short. Let me read them. In the morning when I rise, give me Jesus. You can have all the world, but give me Jesus. Twixt the cradle and the grave, give me Jesus. You can have all the world, but give me Jesus. Marianne Hart, mezzo-soprano, and Dennis Helmrich on the piano. These duets, Dennis, who takes the lead in interpretation?
Well, nobody does, really. In the case of Marianne and I, we had such a good agreement on many things that we didn't really have to think in those terms. Mm. You know, she breathes, I breathe.
Tempo.
Well... You know, you follow what the composer says.
And does Charles Ives give the performers much information? I don't think I've ever seen a score.
Oh, yes, quite a lot. Mm-hmm. Quite a lot.
Oh. Let's talk about this spiritual form a bit. Willie, could we talk with you first? Here's Dennis, who's white, Marianne Hart, who's white, Charles Ives, who was white. How can they interpret a spiritual that's African-American? You're an African-American musician. Do you feel affronted that these white people would be doing this?
No, and I need to make a commercial here. I'm in the Department of African-American Studies now. I'm just a graduate of the School of Music.
All right.
And let me see where I can start. Number one, I feel that music is so open and so free till all of us can become interpreters. Now, this is such a broad subject because I'm coming here with such a big picture from the beginning to where we are now. I feel like most of our time will be given to what we call formal spirituals. And formal spirituals are definitely would be interpreted in light of the European genre. So with a teacher or a composer putting program notes or shall we say, rehearsal notes as to what they want. They have the liberty to do that. Now, when we start talking about authenticity and from the regular origin, well, then we're into another whole ball game, and that's another whole conversation.
Now, I've heard you, Willie Somerville, say before in a conversation with me, you used an analogy about cooking and a chef and recipes. Mm-hmm. Would you repeat that?
Well, as I've been teaching music for 45 years, but I was blessed to come up from some teachers from my father who didn't go to college but started out with just regular music, and then all these other folk I've met since I've traveled around the world. I'm going to say the cooking analogy is this. If you take a person who has been given a recipe for a pumpkin pie or a sweet potato pie, and both pies are good, they would need to have talked with the experts in cooking both pies. Now, if there's someone who wants to do the formal spiritual, then they should talk with someone who's taught that, performed that, or lived that, so that people who hear the formal spiritual, they can recognize it, like someone who's tasting a good sweet potato pie with the nutmeg just right and everything. So I would say, and that's being intelligent, because as a music teacher who was dealing with elementary children at first, especially junior high and high school, I always taught the children how to try and interpret from the music form that you're dealing with rather than cross over. I said, now, some songs cannot sound like you're putting ham hocks in broccoli. And then other songs cannot sound like you're putting cheese sauce over greens. You learn stylistic production.
I appreciate that. Julie Byler, when you were selecting music for this concert coming up of the Chorale on Friday, November 5th, what made you decide to pick spirituals? You have a large choir. It's a diverse choir. It's white and black and many different religions. Here you're picking one particular religion, Christianity, one particular style of music within that. Why did you do that? Defend yourself.
Oh, all right. It's very interesting when you go to select a program. It happens in a number of ways. You either are exposed to a particular piece around which you want to build your program, or you have a theme and you look for pieces to fit that theme. Nothing has been quite as serendipitous as this is turning out to be. The connections here are really remarkable, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But my father was a music teacher, and spirituals were big on his programs. And so I was influenced early to enjoy them, but never to really understand the history, the real history, the part that Willie's talking about. And so I've learned a lot about that. But I admire John Rutter, speaking of white, and an English professor in Cambridge. Why in the world would he write seven arrangements of these spirituals? Well, he was inspired by an African-American soloist, Melanie Marshall, and was so inspired by her solo renditions that he met with her afterward and asked if he could put together this composite of seven spirituals. So I have a feeling it's some of her favorites and some of his favorites that ended up in this series of seven. Spirituals are, you know, when we were planning our trip to Italy, when we did a tour, we were told by the tour company, be sure and include spirituals because it's their favorite. And I thought,
in Europe,
Italians liking spirituals seemed very odd to me. But indeed, when we showed up, all the publicity just talked about American choir singing spirituals. We had maybe three on the program. But I think they're such an expression of so many emotions that they can, people who listen can connect on many, many levels.
Professor Helmrich, when you teach about spirituals to college students, how do you help them learn to understand what a spiritual is and how to perform it?
Well, from a musical point of view, one of the most interesting things to me about the spiritual is the way it is an infectious thing. It's designed in a certain way to bring together a group of people to feel the same thing musically. you don't sit back in your seat and listen to a spiritual. You tap your feet. You sing along. It's a group experience. And if it isn't infectious, it's nowhere. Now, this Ives that you just played, I consider to be inauthentic. I love Ives, but that's not a spiritual to me.
That's, it's an art song.
Yes, kind of. Yeah. Kind of.
Yeah. And he chose to use all those very interesting chords that – how many fingers – you surely used more than 10, I mean, to get all those notes in those chords.
Well, sometimes it feels like that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Spirituals, to me, when I learned about – you know, they weren't called spirituals in the beginning. And, in fact, many of them were not, shall we say, religiously based. They were based on the need for the black men and women to be able to communicate, which they were not allowed to do, speaking, as they were working in the fields under this terrible, burdensome life.
During slavery times.
Yes. And so, ingenious, they began to call out and sing. Singing seemed to be all right with the slave owners. They were able to, and so they were called shouts at one time, or anthems, or gospel. It wasn't until later, in the 1800s, that we gave it the name spirituals. But they were, I learned that there were such things as map songs and songs that would inform them in the days of the Underground Railroad, for instance, songs that would inform them of events that were happening. And they would sing these, and they were passed from plantation to plantation. Then there were the map songs, and one of them, the most, I guess, obvious one is entitled Follow the Drinking Gourd, because it told them where north was, because the Big Dipper was the drinking gourd and the North Star is at the end of the... So they knew, those abolitionists, and both black and white, who were looking to aid the slaves crossing this line of oppression into freedom, they learned how to travel by the water. You notice there are a lot of spirituals that talk about water, deep river and the Jordan, and wade in the water. And so there, it started out as really a need, a desire to communicate. And they, it's not that they were not attuned to the spirituality that they would hear outside the churches of their masters. And so they knew a lot about the Old Testament, and they identified with the Hebrews, for instance. And that's why there's a lot of reference to Joshua and the walls and the
Go down, Moses.
Let my people go. Yes. So that was of interest to me.
There's a wonderful book that the University of Illinois Press published some years ago, and recently, fairly recently, reissued, Sinful Tunes and Spirituals, the African-American Folk Music Tradition, done by a librarian who went back to try to find in correspondence back. These are spirituals and sinful tunes from before the Civil War, but she went back before revolutionary times even to see where there were references to these kind of music, and tried to, and really discovered a lot of the origins, as Julie was mentioning.
And they could get by with this with their slave owners. They were embedded, but the slave owners could understand it on a simply
one level.
Yes, and they were sure that when they talked about being taken into heaven by angels, that they really meant after death heaven. And in fact, they were speaking about the angels being those Underground Railroad people who were going to lead them to their heaven, which turned out to be North America or even Canada, where they were free from this oppression.
Willie Somerville, let me ask you, Dennis mentioned that he thought the Ives version, the Ives setting of Give Me Jesus was inauthentic. Do you have that same response, that same reaction?
Well, I'd like to respond to two things.
All right.
I wish that I'd had time to share with you two books by two African-American authors. I don't know if any of you remember the name Lena McGlynn. Mm-hmm. She was a choral director in the high school of Kenwood, in the Kenwood Academy.
How is McGlynn spelled?
M-C-L-I-N, Lena McGlynn.
Thank you.
And she's been, I'm not sure she's still living, but I was blessed enough to do a workshop with her in 1980, she and Wendell Whalum. And she put out a music history book called The Pulse. I'm not sure if it's still published,
But it is an excellent book put out by Neil Cho's Music in Park Ridge and San Diego. These are excellent books where she opened up talking about blacks coming over here as indentured servants. And that was a different style that came from them, because later when they brought the blacks as slaves, then the times, the conditions kind of influenced what the real spiritual style was, especially since when the slaves had heard the Bible in the churches, you know, from the balcony, uh-huh. They would relate to the victory that came out with the Israelites in the Bible and with Jesus. And so that was one thing. Here's another book called African American Negro Spirituals by James Weldon Johnson and J. Roseman Johnson. These are two excellent, excellent books, not only with a great preface, but some great material. Now, I want to address, if you heard me say earlier, that when you're seeing formal spirituals, you'll say, well, okay, it's going to be with certain rules and what have you. And you want to always, I would tell the kids, you want to make it sound like opera. So making it sound like opera and then somebody who's hearing spirituals and knowing the whole big picture and wondering, did Charles Ives achieve this business, putting the message about Christianity and all that kind of good stuff? And was the contemporary way that he arranged these spirituals, would that have been acceptable in terms of making the spiritual sound and relate to, like, the Fisk Jubilee singers who really made it popular? You know, we're funny in this country. You go to Europe and they'll make you a star, and then you come back and you're great. Well, we need to learn how to boost our own and learn, say, okay, we have jewels right in front of us. Well, in this situation, that didn't offend me as much, because she had a beautiful voice, and I kind of tuned out all the extras. I was really caught up in her singing Give Me Jesus. Uh-huh. So that didn't bother me as much. But as someone who's looking at the theory part of it, then they're looking at the whole big picture, they would not want to compare Charles Ives' writings to William Dawson or Moses Hogan or any of those. That would not have been the same deal. And please let me say this
real quickly. Different styles, different intents.
Right, right.
And probably different audiences.
Right. And in James Weldon Johnson's book, he brought out, said, now, you can say what you will, May, it's the rhythmic part of it, too, that made it sound really, was it really authentic? Because people can tell when some of the rhythms have been tampered with. And it's like the lady who was hearing my choir sing, and she would not let the people clap in the offbeat. She made the folk clap on the beat, and it was a mean-spirited woman. So we did not consider her very authentic, and she had some personal problems. So if you really want the thing to sound right, you try to look who you're imitating or who's guiding you. But it's so many social dynamics here, so I'm going to hush because it gets passionate.
Let me reintroduce our guest for listeners who may have tuned in. And by the way, this is a live call-in show. Let me give the phone numbers for listeners who'd like to call in with a comment or a question, perhaps share an experience of singing spirituals or being influenced by spirituals. In Champaign-Urbana, where this program originates, the number is 217-333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If you're outside our listening area, you may use a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And that includes people who are listening very long distance online at will.illinois.edu/AM. You can hear this program live there. And, of course, this program will be archived if you've missed part of it or have to slip away before the end of it. Want to go back and hear the rest of the comments from our interesting panel on spirituals today. You can find that most easily at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. Leave the G out of keeping, and you'll find that all of our past programs will pop up, and you can select which ones you want to listen to at your convenience via your computer or other portable devices as well. So back to our guests. We're talking with Professor Dennis Helmrich, chair of the Department of accompanying in the Department of Music. Deacon Willie T. Somerville, choir conductor at two African-American churches here in Champaign-Urbana, as well as currently on the staff of the African-American Studies Department at the University of Illinois. And Julie Byler, founding conductor of the Chorale, whose concert focusing on the spiritual form is this coming Friday night, November 5th.
Saturday.
Our dress rehearsal is Friday.
Yes, we'll get ready for it on Friday.
I will confess, I sing with this group, and I do sing quietly, so you can come to the concert and you'll enjoy it. So the concert is Saturday, 7 p.m., November 5th, at Faith United Methodist Church, 1719 South Prospect in Champaign. It's a free concert, although donations are welcome. What happens to those donations? I don't remember receiving my check as a singer.
That's a fact. Unlike a lot of other organizations.
We are all volunteers.
That money, and we do provide two free concerts during the course of our season, consistent with our mission to provide as much quality choral literature to as many people as possible. And so when you come to a free concert, it is that. We do invite you to take the opportunity to contribute to our Young Artist Scholarship Fund. That is a fund that for some 21 years now we have been awarding $1,000 scholarships to outstanding high school seniors who are gifted in music and who are planning to continue their studies at the university level. Because of the generosity of a few very faithful angels in the very earthly sense, we were able this past spring, for instance, to give away 5 scholarships to young folks who are studying at various colleges and universities. So it is probably one of the best things that we do is to support these young people as they go on to study music. And then what we like to do during the course of the following years, their undergraduate and sometimes graduate years, is invite them back to perform with us at a particular concert, as we will do this one. Sometimes when these folks leave a small high school and go to a big campus, they don't have as many performing opportunities, particularly right away. So we like to bring them back and see how they've grown and give them the opportunity to play or sing in front of their own hometown audience.
Since we're about halfway through our program, I need to make a few announcements. This Keeping the Faith program is supported in part, it has been for a number of years, by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois. Coming up at the Y at Friday Forum this coming Friday at noon, as part of their lecture series on the future of learning is public education under siege. This coming week, the Dean of the College of Education at the university, Mary Kalantzis, will be speaking on Education What Now. That's Friday, November 4th at the University YMCA on the corner of Wright and Chalmers on campus. Easily available by bus, and around on Fridays you can usually find a parking place by noon. Do come to that lecture. It's a very good series. I've heard a couple of the talks, and they're quite good. That's Friday at noon at the University Y. If you'd like to reserve a lunch, you may call 337-1500 during the week and reserve a lunch at the Thai Eatery, the Y Thai, as it's often called. Or you can take your own lunch or simply go and hear the free lecture at the University Y. Also at the Y is a very interesting exhibit of photographs called Waveland. That's one of the communities that was hit very hard by Hurricane Katrina. And there's a very interesting sort of a photographic essay, a series of photographs that are fascinating there you can see at the Y. Also coming up this week from the Intercultural Friendship Foundation is a dinner at the I Hotel, November 3rd. That's Thursday at 7 p.m., where they'll be giving some awards to people who have been exemplary in working toward interfaith and intercultural understanding. Naomi Jacobson is one of the people receiving that award this year. And for information about that, you may go to the IFF website, Intercultural Friendship Foundation. Put that in your search box, or you can send them an email at iffuiuc@gmail.com. Well, let's get back to our guests, our panel talking about spirituals. We have another spiritual I'd like to play at this time. Julie, set this up for us. What is it we're going to hear? Who is singing this?
This is, in fact, a recording of John Rutter's group in Cambridge.
John Rutter is the composer as well as the conductor of this group?
He is. He's the arranger.
Arranger.
I guess I should say.
That's
and,
fair.
And the soloist is his muse, Melanie Marshall. She is singing Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child, which appears as number 4 in the series of 7. And
this will be part of the concert on Saturday night.
It will.
Sung by Elizabeth Buckley.
Sung by Elizabeth Buckley. Do you want me to tell you a little interesting tidbit about Elizabeth now or later?
Why don't we hear this first,
okay, so,
and then we'll hear about Elizabeth. But,
Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child can certainly be interpreted. Very often children were just ripped away from their parents at a very early age and sold as slaves.
In slavery, yeah.
And I urge anyone who hasn't been to the Lincoln Museum to go and look at that life-size display of, in this case, the father being torn away from the family.
It's in Springfield, Illinois, the Lincoln Museum.
Fabulous. Emotional, first-hand kind of experience. But also, you can think about these slaves being taken away from their African home. And so many of these have so many levels on which to think about these texts. But this is Melanie Marshall and the choir singing Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child.
Sometimes I feel
piece goes on a bit, but we'll stop there. The Cambridge Singers, directed by John Rutter, who was the arranger of these seven spirituals put in this Feel the Spirit. This has come, Julie, do you know the album, the CD this comes from?
It's called Feel the Spirit.
Feel the Spirit is. Great, by John Rutter. Well, lovely voice, Melanie Marshall, soloist. You were starting to tell us about the soloist who will be doing these at your concert coming up this Saturday, Elizabeth Buckley, University of Illinois, a PhD graduate, relatively recently. Tell us about her.
Well, we've formed a rather good friendship, actually. She has sung with us a couple of times, both as a soloist and just as a member of the choir, which is pretty unusual for a soloist of her caliber, but she loves that sense of being a part of something bigger than oneself. And so she has helped us out on a number of occasions. She's a wonderful mezzo, and she has a great story to tell about spirituals, actually. She talked about it to the chorale last Sunday when expressing her appreciation for being invited to do this. It seems that Elizabeth's father is a pastor in the East. And
a Lutheran pastor.
A Lutheran pastor. And at the time that Robert Gretz was in seminary, he served in that predominantly black church where Elizabeth's father was. And he and his wife were very pro-abolitionist, and they wanted to become involved socially. And so when he finished at that church and finished his seminary training, they went down to Montgomery and became an active part of the civil rights movement down there, got a black church in Montgomery, learned that their neighbor up the street was Rosa Parks, and so they became heavily involved in the Montgomery bus movement, which was, of course, a crucial part of the civil rights movement. And in the church, in Elizabeth's father's church, there is this photo that Robert Gretz sent back of him meeting Dr. Martin Luther King. And she said every time...
When he was still young.
Yes, right. King, of course, was young, even after he was killed. But so she would go in the church on a regular basis, and this photograph was there for her to see every time she went through, and it's where she learned to sing and appreciate spirituals. So she, this is particularly a joy for her, I think, to be able to interpret these.
We've had Elizabeth Buckley as a guest on this show before. She also just this fall came out with a CD called Must the Winter Come So Soon, which is available. A nice selection of sort of hot songs for mezzo-sopranos. what would a music professor say about, how should I have described that, Dennis?
Well, Must the Winter Come So Soon is an aria from Samuel Barber's Vanessa, sung by Erica, the character Erica.
And she has selections from The Messiah and other things as well. So
mezzos are sometimes given hot roles.
Yes, they certainly are.
Carmen. Yeah.
And Samson and Delilah, for instance.
Yeah. I have a question. Do you have any authentic spirituals queued up to play?
Well, we don't.
Oh.
We don't.
And I apologize
for
that.
No, it's quite all right.
I didn't know if I could bring a CD.
Yeah, I should have made that clear. I'm sorry.
Willie and I may have to sing for you.
Speaking of singing, just let me say, for the one time several years ago, I went to at Willie's behest to become a part of the Martin Luther King Choir. Now, if you ever want to feel insignificant, be a white woman who reads only on paper and go to one of Willie's choir rehearsals and just feel completely overwhelmed. And I remember saying...
Or you have to learn everything immediately by rote.
Exactly. And I said, Willie, I need something on paper. I need some. So he brought me something the next week that, of course, bore no resemblance whatsoever to what was being sung. But it's a great experience.
And the Martin Luther King gospel experience held at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts every January as part of Martin Luther King Weekend is a wonderful experience where scholarships are given out to local high school students who are going on to college. Willie, tell us a little bit about that experience and what it's like to prepare a mixed choir, a choir that's black, mainly black, but also some whites. you have very few rehearsals to develop some wonderful music. How do you do it?
Well, number one, let me just pass on the good news first. So much more of the new music is really written with the rhythms close by and what have you. But it's just like anything else. If you're teaching a student to interpret Beethoven, Rachmaninoff, and Mozart, they really need to hear styles. Now, getting back to preparing the choir, one thing that I get a lot of help on is the fact that I ask people to accept what I'm doing. And that's why I told Julie and others who had not done rote music or what have you, or we had not been used to clapping and rocking at the same time, to just kind of feel free at first and catch on and let your chocolate brothers and sisters help you out and whatever. Because you have to understand, our white brothers and sisters are just so used to being up front. And it's
uptight, is that what you said?
I said up front, not uptight. No, because I've taught white children a long time, and I can remember somebody made the remarks about my students at Brookings, say, you're trying to make our children like little Africans. I said, no, I'm teaching them authentic styles, because you didn't complain until I got to the jamming part, uh-huh. You know. But getting back to the King part, with the focus on King's life as a preacher, and I treat it like a Christian service. I don't try to be politically correct, because I would not dare go up in a Jewish temple and tell the people, you have to accept my songs on the cross. So Martin Luther King was a preacher, and Christian music at that time was not trying to be politically correct. So I told everybody to roll with the punches and get in there and do what you need to do, and they did. And that's why I have some lifelong friends, because we shared experiences. And one of the best things we can do as teachers and leaders of public community groups or what have you is try to meet people where they are, because if you're not doing what people like, then people will go where they want to do. And if people come in not wanting to learn, they still can't be helpful. So people came in with open minds, and we were able to teach lots of music quickly, because I do have that gift that I'm just looking at you, and before you know it, you got it. So I don't wait around trying to make sure that I'm trying to describe what we're doing. We experience it.
Now, we should say quickly that students at the University of Illinois have a wonderful opportunity to hear very authentic gospel music, contemporary and traditional, some going back well before the Civil War, and some written in the last couple of years with the Ollie Watts Davis Black Chorus, the gospel choir here on campus that has some wonderful performances. And it is also open to students of any faith.
It's a very rainbow group, absolutely.
Yeah, very right. Inclusive. Any religious background or none, and of all races. So it's a marvelous opportunity for students and others here in this community in Champaign-Urbana. Let me give the phone numbers again. We're down to our last 10 minutes or so, but we can have calls still. 333-9455 if you have a question or comment. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. Again, our guests, Julie Byler, Willie T. Somerville, Dennis Helmrich.
I have a Martin Luther King story, if you're interested.
Please.
Mm-hmm. When I was a freshman at Yale, the university chaplain was William Sloan Coffin, and he invited Dr. King to come and give a sermon on one Sunday morning. And so we all went to Battelle Chapel to hear him speak. I was brought up as an Episcopalian. I was a choir boy at Grace Church in Newark and at St. Thomas on Fifth Avenue in New York. And so my experience was 100% Protestant.
High church Protestant.
High church. Oh, my, it was high church. It was so high that, you know, nobody spoke in church. You could sing a song, you could sing a hymn, or you could speak a response. But, you know, even whispering was frowned upon. So Martin Luther King came to Battelle Chapel and gave a rip snorter of a sermon, but there were all these funny pauses in it. And of course,
silence.
Everybody should have been saying,
Amen,
you know, or right on, brother, or whatever. But, you know, the Northerners that we were sat around on and said nothing. So I relate this a little bit to the experience of learning about spirituals, because they did teach us spirituals in school when I was a kid. And we even sang some in the Episcopal Church in a very white style, I have to say. So I had to learn about that from black people. And you can't learn it from white people. Unless the white people have already learned it from black people.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, you have accompanied Kathleen Battle, for example, singing spirituals. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, actually, the programs that I've played with Kathleen have only had a few spirituals on them. And she's, of course, a very excellent singer of spirituals. But her repertoire is small in that area.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So she's mainly trained in the European music tradition.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, and we need to embrace that knowledge because everybody black is not relating to the black experience. I could be mean and bring it a little bit closer to home, but I won't do that. But the point I'm trying to make is it's just kind of good to ask or be around someone who does. Professor Eve Harwood had a class that I took several years ago. And this is the way she opened up the class. She said, we want you to do some projects on some African-American music. And we don't want you to go and put the program together trying to please a white person. Give us some stuff that's authentic about the community that's not published a lot. I called my parents up and I said, Mom.
In Arkansas?
In Arkansas. I said, Mom and Dad, I want to record you all singing for class. They said, what? They called me son. What, son? I said, well, yeah. Sing stuff that you're comfortable with. I said, now let somebody, at that time we used the tape recorder. Right. Let them tape you. And I want you to send it up here so I can make a good grade. Well, that part of the class I got a good grade on. But there was another African-American lady. Her name was Mrs. Dorothy Moreland. She's passed away. But she was a pianist at the Free Will Baptist Church when I played there in graduate school. And I'll never forget, I did a paper on her life and interviewed her. And it was one of the most refreshing things I've ever done. So I'm researching where people have come from, their things. She was very comfortable playing a lot of the gospel music by ear in the sharp keys. Well, a lot of folk didn't want to do that. But she just,
I don't know what that means, playing in the sharp keys.
Yeah, well, that means that she would stay in A major or B major with five sharps and three sharps. And
so I take it that's very hard to play? Or
no, it's not.
It's different.
My teacher and my friend, Dr. Bates at the University of Arkansas, say it's really a mindset. Oh. Because he said people who play by ear are comfortable anywhere. Those of us who read, we would just not want to be trying to jam in five sharps. So, and that's just a mindset.
Okay.
But when I took her paper back and showed it to Dr. Harwood, she said, this is what I'm talking about. Now, it's always good when people are doing research, that they don't try to change things. Julie, have you heard of Kirby Shaw?
Oh, yes.
He made me very angry in a workshop once. Very angry. He put out a written arrangement of one of Aretha Franklin's songs from her big Amazing Grace album. And I went up to him. I said, sir, you didn't write this song. I know I didn't, but I copyrighted it. And I mean, he stole it. Oh, a thief, a music thief.
Well, yes, he'd done a lot of work for swing choirs and stuff like that.
Well, be careful here. This is going out over the air. We don't want to get sued for anything.
Let me say something about Amazing Grace, though. Amazing Grace is on our program. Arranged by Jackson Berkey. You know Jackson Berkey? Jackson Berkey and Chip Davis in 1974 formed the Mannheim Steamrollers. So
that's some popular group of some sort.
Who's going to be local soon? They put out a Christmas album, I think, for which they're most well known. Mm-hmm. At any rate, his accompaniment is interesting to say the least. And so, the spirituals that we have on this program, aside from John Rutter's, are each of them quite different. Starting with Jackson Berkey's "Amazing Grace" and John Washburn's "Balm in Gilead." It's an a cappella version. John Washburn got his degree here at the University of Illinois and is in Canada presently directing a vocal ensemble there and has used the most interesting, I can't even begin to describe it, he's taken the word balm in Balm and Gilead and used it as a very muted percussive sound throughout the piece. It's really quite lovely. And then we're doing Undine Moore's Daniel, Servant of the Lord. You know about that.
Yes.
Undine was She was the first woman graduate at Fisk University. I believe that's true. And has set Daniel, servant of the Lord. Also in this program, if I can just quickly mention it, is our accompanist who sits behind the keyboard faithfully, playing parts when we need parts and just playing accompaniments, is going to perform.
He has a PhD in accompanying.
Yes, from Peabody. This is Dr. Michael Hammer, and the greatest gift to me since I can't remember when.
Peabody is good, not quite up to the University of Illinois, but acceptable.
Oh, I'm not going there. I can't go there. He's playing a Margaret Bonds arrangement of Troubled Waters, which we will recognize as Wade in the Water. She was a remarkable pianist and teacher and the first African-American woman to solo with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and is quite an improviser. And so as a result of that, a lot of her work is not written down, which is sad for those who want to be able to reproduce it. But Michael is going to play for us one that has been, and that's Troubled Waters.
Let's talk a little bit about improvisation in relation to the spirituals. What does that do for an accompanist when the conductor of a large group improvises as the spirit moves?
Well, I don't improvise.
Uh-huh.
I try to understand from the source, from the arranger, whether it's Lena McLin or, Harry Burley or any of the great arrangers. I try to drink the water of that source and understand the tradition that's behind it and make it infectious.
But I heard a trill or two in this Cambridge Singers group, not only from the singer, but somehow in that orchestra. Was that all just rehearsed and carefully put in just that place?
Yes, it was.
Was it? Okay.
John Rutter's interpretation and orchestration of these spirituals has a jazz flavor to it. In fact, we're using his small jazz combo orchestration, which is flute, clarinet, oboe, bassoon, trumpet, horn, harp, and percussion. And they're all of that flavor. So it's not your imagination, and he didn't make it up on the spot.
And does it bother anybody else that there's an oboe playing before Motherless Child in what we heard earlier?
It didn't bother me because of the nature of the instrument. I think it sets the quality of the sound sets a somber, sad, excruciating sound.
The oboe is the motherless child of the woodwinds.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I do agree.
And it was an orchestra. I mean, you know.
It was.
At the beginning, you know that an orchestra is accompanying this.
He does very interesting things. Mm-hmm. Each of these seven numbers has one of those instruments featured. The flute, for instance, has a specific number. The first number and the last number are all choir numbers, and all of the ones in between, the five in between, have the solo voice and a featured, I would say, solo instrument.
So, well, is it fair to say that Rutter is interesting and even exciting and spiritual in one sense, but still inauthentic in terms of the African-American tradition?
I think that's fair, yes.
Is that fair? Okay.
Mm-hmm, I
told you, when it's formal music, mm-hmm, and somebody's not trying to please an audience of folk in a church setting, then you know that you're going to concertize and not go to worship.
Uh-huh.
So,
right. And as far as improvisation goes, I was first exposed to it in the critical way, I guess, when I sang with Willie's choir. And being a choir director and having certain hand motions that I'm familiar with, you soon learn Willie's motions for keep it going, and it works itself into a really frenzied state, and then it comes out. But the motions are not something you learn at conducting school, which, of course, is
where did you learn,
real
really?
Conducting is about.
Yes, some things are passed on by the culture. But let me inject this. In this town, now you don't have to go to New York, there are some young musicians that don't read well. They don't read at all, and they are incredible.
Uh-huh.
They are absolutely incredible.
They've grown up in churches.
Yes, brought up in churches, brought up around people who play. And if you needed to have somebody accompany you that's authentic and that improvisation would not do anything but just maybe a few good ones to the Black Chorus Concert when Jeffrey LaVallee played at some of the intermissions and just did all this stuff. He and Michael McKay. There are guys out here who can do this. Now, there are people who can read, and then there are people who can't read. But improvisation, lots of times,
is a natural thing. Reading music.
Right,
yeah.
Right. It's a natural thing. And sometimes you get some of the greatest sounds by just letting people emote and share and record it, because there are people who can write it down after it's done.
Since this is a program that deals with religion and ethics and spirituality and so forth, what about the religious content, the theological content of spirituals? The first one we heard, although it was a Charles Ives setting, it's an authentic spiritual in terms of its focus on Jesus. Talk a little bit about that, Willie.
Well, my thing is this. You know, I'm a Jesus man, and when I hear that name, I don't care if they've been playing with it. I like it, you know. So with the emphasis on Jesus, to me, if you're going, people who love sacred music, they're going to accept it unless something has been tampered with the text around Jesus.
Now, you're very public about your Christianity and your own commitment to it, but I know in your work in the public schools, you weren't trying to convert people, but you were telling them in this, you may not be a Christian, but you could sing this authentically. How?
Well, I put it this way. If you are going to interpret the music as it should be interpreted, why tamper with the text? That's authentic. Okay. See, one thing I love about the University of Illinois, and that is the openness of the teaching and the academic freedom. And that's really the marks of a good school.
We're just down to our last minute or so, but Professor Helmrich, when there are many people at the university and the School of Music who are not religious at all, maybe even anti-religious, but they can appreciate even spirituals. How can that be?
Oh, how could it not be? I mean, there's poetry there. There's incredible energy. There's the most beautiful music. I mean, how do you not respond to that?
Uh-huh. They're musicians first, I think, is that. And you can appreciate.
And there's spirituality. I mean, even atheists are spiritual.
Exactly right. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're out of time. Let me thank our guests, Professor Dennis Helmrich from the School of Music at the University of Illinois, Deacon Willie T. Somerville from at least two churches, maybe more, choir director at Urbana and on the faculty and staff at the African American Studies Department at the University of Illinois, and Julie Byler, founding conductor for the Chorale, whose concert is coming up this coming Saturday, November 5th, 7 o'clock, a free concert at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign, Illinois, on South Prospect Avenue. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Craft League of Champaign-Urbana, presenting their 29th annual Arts and Craft Show on November 12th and 13th at the Urbana Civic Center. Open Saturday 10 to 5 and Sunday 11 to 4. More information is available at 367-9546.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD.